Good evening. It's Sunday, July 26th. Hundreds of protests across the country this weekend, from silent vigils to noisy demonstrations, to honor immigrants who were killed by ICE or died in ICE custody. In Chico, California, in what activists called a vigil for the disappeared.
Calling upon our leaders to reveal where these people are, to reunite them with their families, to heal the wound that is festering in our country.
The U.S. pauses bombing on Iran for a second night as Donald Trump's military advisors say ongoing bombing could drain the already diminished stockpile of U.S. weapons across the entire Middle East, while Iran says it will pause what it called retaliatory attacks against U.S. allies in the region. In Maine, former state lawmaker and fifth-generation logger Troy Jackson has secured the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate after a special nomination convention. He will face Republican Senator Susan Collins in November in a race that could decide which party controls the Senate. Donald Trump has ordered that signs be installed at the Smithsonian's U.S. History Museum, directing visitors to what he calls accurate information regarding America's history, end quote. The move follows a report from his domestic policy council criticizing the museum's exhibits. A big win for India's youth-led cockroach movement, after Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government accepts all of its demands, hundreds of thousands of young people had occupied central parts of New Delhi, and the protests were spreading to a dozen other Indian cities. This is the KPFA Weekend News with Vanessa Tate. I'm Glenn Reeder.
Hundreds of protests across the country this weekend, from silent vigils to noisy demonstrations, to honor two longtime immigrants who were killed by ICE, Lorenzo Salgado Araujo of Houston, Texas, and Juan Sebastian Guerrero of Biddeford, Maine, as well as others who were killed by or died in the custody of federal immigration agents. Demands included independent investigations and the removal of ICE agents from local streets. In Fairfax, Virginia, hundreds gathered with signs and chants, including local resident Rita Arsenault and David Miller.
I just feel really strongly about how badly everyone's being treated and what's been happening to our country.
I think that there's a moral obligation for us to speak up about our values. These values are not being represented well by this administration, and certainly not by the way that ICE has been acting in our communities.
In Chico, California, in what activists called a vigil for the disappeared, demonstrators unrolled a 40-foot-long banner with the names of over 2,000 people whom they said had been taken off the streets and sometimes out of their own homes by ICE agents. A mass was said for those who died, and a local religious leader spoke.
Calling upon our leaders to reveal where these people are, to reunite them with their families, to heal the wound that is festering in our country.
Outside a Home Depot in Pasadena, California, with rows of white crosses for those killed in ICE custody, people held a vigil. Marlon Portillo of the National Day Labor's Organizing Network.
Ninguno más. No lo, vamos a seguirlo. Ellos quieren que olvidemos y que no protestemos, que estemos callados, pero no nos vamos a callar.
No more dead, no more. They want us to forget, not to protest. We will not stay silent. We will not forget. None of these human beings deserved to die at the hands of ICE and their killing instincts. They are victims of the assassination, deportation machine that is called ICE.
In Vermont, about 30 people blocked the doors of an ICE enforcement surveillance office in the town of Williston on Friday. 13 were arrested after they went limp and refused to move. The building houses ICE's National Criminal Analysis and Targeting Center, where data is gathered from social media and other sources, according to federal records cited by the Vermont Digger, a local news site. In Milwaukee, a memorial bike ride of hundreds marked the six-month anniversary of Alex Preti's killing by ICE agents in Minneapolis. Preti was a Veterans Administration nurse and an avid cyclist. On the anniversary, Preti's mother posted on social media about her enduring sadness, writing that no one has been held accountable for her son's death, and that her family has never even received an apology or a single phone call from government or police officials. She also expressed thanks to the community for their support and urged people to continue the fight to protect their neighbors. Organizers say they logged over 330 actions across the U.S., which were jointly sponsored by Indivisible, 5051, Public Citizen, the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and other organizations.
The U.S. has paused strikes on Iran for a second night as U.S. military officials halt its bombing campaign due to dwindling U.S. weapons stockpiles. Admiral Bradley Cooper, the U.S. military commander in the region, told Trump today that the U.S. military campaign had reached the limits of its effectiveness, and other U.S. military advisors said ongoing bombing could dangerously drain the already diminished stockpile of air defense munitions across the entire Middle East, according to the New York Times and other media. Iran said today it would pause what it called retaliatory attacks against U.S. allies in the region. This comes after Iranian-backed Ansar Allah, also known as the Houthis, attacked Saudi Arabian oil tankers in the Red Sea. And Saudi Arabia responded with missile attacks on Yemen yesterday, opening a possible second front in the war. Stephen Zunis is professor of Middle East Studies at the University of San Francisco.
Reports seem to indicate that Trump was leaning strongly towards dramatically escalating the bombing raids on Iran to include some critical civilian infrastructure, but he was talked out of it by those who recognize that Iran still had strong retaliatory capability, that even with continuing to intercept 90% of Iranian projectiles, enough to get through to do a lot of damage to American forces and very possibly to the civilian infrastructure of many of America's regional allies. But he also recognized that even if they could defend themselves more effectively than that, they'd soon run out of these Patriot missiles and other interceptors, not just the Middle East, but from various theaters around the world where the U.S. has set up positions around bases and around allied countries. So now he's going back to the negotiating table, supposedly. But this doesn't mean there's going to be an agreement. Indeed, what we are looking at in all likelihood is a continuation of an on-again, off-again war that could go on for many months.
You say a few months. Could this be almost like a permanent war, which, of course, Trump promised not to get us into?
The 2015 nuclear agreement that was signed by the United States, Iran, and five other countries was very detailed, left no room for ambiguity. By contrast, this memorandum of understanding that Iran and the U.S. negotiated several weeks ago was quite vague, and both sides had an incentive to try to press for their advantage in the various unresolved issues. And, of course, Iran, having found this incredible leverage they have in terms of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, recognizes that any agreement that they have that can come forward is going to be more to their advantage and less to the advantage of the West. Now, Trump, of course, can't tolerate that. He doesn't want to look like a loser. And he is willing to keep this war going on for many months or longer, hold the global economy hostage with the rising petroleum prices and shortages in fertilizers, threaten the chances of his Republican colleagues in November, rather than sacrifice his ego by admitting that he made a blunder and he has to settle.
And how do the Houthi attacks in the Red Sea affect all this?
Well, Saudi Arabia, given the size of its country and the fact that it has two coasts, was trying to work around the closure of the straits by shipping more oil and other supplies out of its Red Sea ports rather than its Persian Gulf ports.
Stephen Zunis is professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as founding director of the program in Middle Eastern Studies.
In Maine, former state lawmaker and fifth-generation logger Troy Jackson has secured the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. He will face Republican incumbent Senator Susan Collins in November in a race that could decide which party controls the Senate. Jackson was nominated during a special convention of Democratic delegates at which he spoke.
Parents are working two or three jobs and still falling behind. And meanwhile, the billionaires and corporations rigging this economy keep getting richer. And Susan Collins has done every damn thing that they asked for. For nearly 30 years, Collins has told Maine that she is concerned. She was concerned while she rubber-stamped Trump's Medicaid cuts and gutted our health care. She's concerned when she cut taxes for corporations and the wealthy. Concerned when she confirmed justices who overturned Roe versus Wade. And really tragically, she was concerned when she gave ICE billions to terrorize our neighbors and murder people in the streets with no accountability. But concern does not lower the cost of groceries or gas. Concern does not keep our maternity wards and rural hospitals like down in Lincoln County open. Concern does not restore all the rights that she's taken away. Maine does not need another 6 years of concern. We need someone with courage. We need a fighter. And we need a senator who remembers exactly who sent them to Washington, which is you.
Jackson replaces Graham Plattner, who won the Democratic primary in June, but withdrew from the race earlier this month following allegations of sexual assault that Plattner has denied. Jackson told reporters Saturday that he has not been in touch with Plattner and is building a new movement, adding that the campaign was, quote, bigger than any one person. Jackson has the endorsement of Our Revolution, the political organization founded by independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Jackson supports Medicare for all and has called for the abolition of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Collins said earlier this week that she knows Jackson well and that his positions are, quote, clearly in line with socialism. Asked by reporters about that description, Jackson said, quote, I don't really care. What I am is a guy from northern Maine that's a logger, unquote. Democrats view Maine as one of the best opportunities to flip a Senate seat because it's a state that Donald Trump lost in 2024. But Collins begins with a huge fundraising advantage of $42 million already committed from the Republicans' Maine Super PAC. Jackson is running a grassroots campaign and has so far raised just over $1 million.
And a friendly reminder, KPFA Pacifica Radio is in the middle of its summer fund drive, and we don't have to tell you about who is paying for and controlling the vast majority of media out there. People with big bucks who want to control the narrative in their interest. So you know how important non-commercial, listener-supported news is. Please donate whatever you can. Sustaining memberships are the best to keep things humming in this cash-strapped, shoestring Pacifica radio station. Please go to kpfa.org to help keep this station on the air for at least another 75 years following its founding in 1949. That's kpfa.org. And we and all the other listeners, thank you. Donald Trump has ordered that signs be installed at the Smithsonian's U.S. History Museum, directing visitors to what he calls accurate information regarding America's history, end quote. The move follows a report from his domestic policy council criticizing the museum's exhibits. Smithsonian officials have pushed back, saying the report mischaracterizes their work. The Smithsonian operates independently, so Trump's order targets only sidewalks maintained by the National Park Service. Critics worry this could lead to a whitewashed version of history. Democratic House leader Hakeem Jeffries responded on CNN.
Well, we're going to explore every legislative avenue and every litigation avenue, as we've repeatedly done up until this point. Here's the thing. Black history is American history, and we are not going to let the extremists whitewash it. Not now, not ever.
That was House Minority Leader and leader of the House Democratic Caucus, Hakeem Jeffries.
After weeks of protests, a big win for India's youth-led cockroach movement, after Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government accepted all of its demands, including the resignation of the country's education minister, whom protesters say leaked national entrance exam questions. That includes compensation payments to the families of students who died by suicide as a result of the scandal. Hundreds of thousands of young people had occupied central parts of New Delhi, and the protests were spreading to a dozen other Indian cities, led by the recently formed Cockroach Janata Party, a wordplay on Modi's ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP. Student protesters co-opted the word after India's Chief Justice referred to young people as cockroaches during a court hearing. After police brutally beat students with batons, shot them with pellet guns, and lobbed tear gas at them earlier this week, more joined the protest. Demonstrations, sit-ins, and hunger strikes across India by the youth-led Cockroach Janata Party are a significant show of public dissent against Modi's authoritarian government, according to writer and activist Arundhati Roy, who spoke on Democracy Now.
It's really a generation whose parents and grandparents wore those Modi masks and chanted Modi, 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 and got him into power. It is their children now who are saying the emperor has no clothes, and the mockery and the humor. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable what's going on, the dancing, the singing, that old, you know, really boring Gandhian protest style has gone. It's just so exuberant and joyful. But as I said in the piece that I wrote, there are two things. One is that this is the protesters. There are Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists. It's a sort of demonstration of what we would like India to be.
That was Indian writer and activist Arundhati Roy speaking on Democracy Now! She has a new essay in Wire titled Cockroach Democracy, Unarmed and Dangerous.
German police in Berlin say they've shot and killed a man, Abdul Balaut, suspected of driving a van into a crowd near Berlin's Pride Festival last night, killing one person and leaving more than two dozen others injured. The attack took place near the Brandenburg Gate, away from the main festival. Berlin's Pride Festival is one of Europe's largest LGBTQ+ celebrations. The attack has prompted calls for increased security at major events in Germany. In the neighboring Netherlands, Amsterdam is hosting World Pride this week and next, alongside its own annual Pride celebrations. Amsterdam Mayor Femke Halsema said authorities and organizers are closely monitoring the security situation after the Berlin attack, but aim to prevent any extra measures from getting in the way of celebrating freedom and love.
Israeli settler attacks are being reported today across the occupied West Bank, stretching from Nablus to Hebron, with Palestinian authorities calling for international action against large-scale settler violence, according to Middle East Eye. Israel arrested more than 70 Palestinians across the occupied West Bank this weekend following settler attacks Friday, that left four Palestinian villagers and two Israeli soldiers dead. More from KPFA's Christopher Martinez.
On Friday, armed Israeli settlers, allegedly backed by Israeli forces, killed four Palestinians and injured others in an attack on the town of Tal, near Nablus. During the attack, a Palestinian man seized a settler's weapon and killed an armed settler, wounding two others. Walid Zidane is head of the Tal Village Council.
What happened around 8:30 to 9 in the morning, a group of settlers, approximately 20 settlers, entered the southern area of the Tel village. People went to the area because it is a residential area to protect the citizens there. What happened is that the settlers, under the protection of the army, attacked the people. When someone sees his brother being beaten, what will he do? Or if a settler shoots him, what will he do? As a reaction, he will defend him.
In response, Israel launched military operations, with Israeli National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir saying Palestinian villages in the West Bank should be made to resemble Beit Hanun, a Gaza town that has been destroyed. A United Nations committee voted Friday to designate an archaeological site in the occupied West Bank as a World Heritage Site, along with several sites in Lebanon. The decision by UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, came days after Israel's foreign ministry urged the rejection of the sites, calling the nominations a weaponization of cultural heritage. But the UN body went ahead with the designations, putting the ancient hilltop town of Sebastia in the West Bank, along with the sites in Lebanon, on both the World Heritage List and the List of World Heritage Sites in Danger. Adel Naim Daoud Atieh is Palestine's delegate to UNESCO.
Your support will be remembered by the Palestinian people, particularly by the residents of Sebastia, who have protected this extraordinary site through generations despite occupation, restrictions, and repeated attempts to separate them from their own heritage.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, said Israel could not ensure law and order in the territory it unlawfully occupies under international law, and called on other states to intervene. Albanese said in a social media post that UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres should invoke Article 99 of the UN Charter to flag a threat to peace, saying that the UN Security Council should impose sanctions against Israel and deploy a peacekeeping force. If the US or other nations vetoed that action, she said the UN General Assembly could overrule the veto. In Gaza, 9 more Palestinians were killed and 36 injured on Saturday. Since agreeing to a supposed ceasefire in Gaza last October, Israel has killed 1,200 Palestinians and wounded over 3,800 people. Neither the United Nations-backed and Trump-created Board of Peace nor Trump himself have condemned a single attack, according to DropSite News.
At a rally in Georgia this week, President Donald Trump touted his program where babies born during his second term are eligible for $1,000 from the government if their parents open a Trump account, seed money that Trump says will give kids a, quote, shot at the American dream. Trump says the accounts give poor children the opportunity to become wealthy by adulthood if their parents contribute an additional $5,000 a year, the maximum allowed. But economist Richard Wolff says most people don't have thousands to invest every year, and if they did, there are better places to put it.
As a chance to be rich, it's childishly silly. It doesn't allow people to be rich unless they can contribute many thousands of dollars on a regular basis every year. That's when you get the money. And if you're able to put away $5,000 a year, then you have 100 different opportunities to do that. And there are some that are better and some that are worse. These symbolic acts of his, like these accounts, don't change the basic problem. And that is that we have an economic system that just achieved the most stunning obscenity imaginable. We made the already richest man in the United States, Elon Musk, even richer, so he's our first trillionaire. Taking that money that he added to his wealth, $300 or $400 billion, and doing something for the American people, that would be an interesting program. Nothing like that is being done. And by the way, if we did that, Mr. Musk would still be the richest person on this planet. Compared to what we could have gotten, these programs are the childishly chicken feed alternative that everyone should see through.
There's some speculation that this is an attempt to ward off the encroaching threat, which Trump and the Heritage Foundation talk about constantly, of young people being attracted to not just socialism, but programs where the government helps. And now Trump is saying, well, what about this one, Trump account? So this will ward off socialism or something.
People in America ought to notice a remarkable coincidence. After 75 years in which it was politically suicide for anyone to accept the label socialism in the public life of the United States, we now have a rising movement of socialist candidates running for office and winning the office. Not just Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, not just Zoran Mamdani in New York City. And that resurgence of socialism is exactly timed together with the arrival on the national scene of Donald Trump. So on behalf of socialists everywhere, I want to thank Mr. Trump, because what he does in the way of exemplifying what capitalism is all about is recruiting socialists in a way that nothing else I can think of has been doing.
Rick Wolf is Emeritus Professor of Economics at the University of Michigan and currently teaches at the New School in Manhattan and hosts the weekly show Economic Update, which runs Friday mornings at 10 a.m. right here on KPFA 94.1 FM and online worldwide at kpfa.org.
California Senator Alex Padilla, joined by several Democratic colleagues, is demanding an investigation into what he calls Donald Trump's abuse of emergency powers to support fossil fuel energy and the use of taxpayer funds to subsidize commercial coal infrastructure. In a letter to the Trump administration's GAO acting comptroller, Padilla and his colleagues expressed concerns over the Department of Energy's plan to use up to $245 million in Defense Production Act funds to support coal-fired power plants and construct the West Gateway Terminal Project in Oakland. This terminal project would primarily serve foreign commercial markets rather than meet national emergency needs. Congress has never appropriated funds, wrote the Democratic legislators, with the intent, quote, of propping up a dying industry, adding that the funds were intended by Congress for the critical modernization and resilience of the nation's grid. And thanks to everyone who is donating in KPFA's fund drive. Your support keeps us here on the air at 94.1 FM in the Bay Area and beyond. If you haven't yet pledged, please take a look at kpfa.org and make a secure online donation. We thank you. And for the weather in the San Francisco Bay Area, tonight sunny, lows in the 50s coastside to the 70s inland. Tomorrow cloudy with temperatures from the 60s coastside to the 70s inland in the San Joaquin Valley. Tonight clear with a low of 66. Tomorrow sunny with a high of 99. That's it for the news tonight. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our technical producer, Lynn Howe, and to Craig Alderson and Ken Pierce for their help today. With Glenn Rader, I'm Vanessa Tate. Good evening.